Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's late May in New York City, and you know what that means. No, not trips to the beach or Prospect Park. No, not the Mets already out of playoff contention. No, not the solemnity of the Ascension, though that is why alternate side of the street parking is suspended today. It's late May, which means it's time for the World Science Festival, now in its seventh year and quickly becoming an early summer tradition. Here in New York City this year, there are talks on DNA and alien life, stargazing from the deck of the Intrepid, that's tonight, a staged reading of Albert Einstein's letters, we'll hear some of that, and the presentation of the Kavli Award, second only to the Nobel when it comes to science honors. And to discuss all this and more, I'm happy to welcome back to the studio Brian Green, professor of mathematics and physics at Columbia University and founder of the World Science Festival, and Alan Alda, actor, director, and champion of science education, particularly through the Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University and hosting Scientific American Frontiers on PBS. Brian Green, Alan Alda, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
And I know you had the Einstein reading last night. We'll hear some of the fun clips from that. The award ceremony just this morning, I will ask you who won, and lots of events this afternoon. So thanks for making the time on this busy 24 hours. You can take a power nap in the green room when we're done if you need it. But let's start with Albert Einstein. The production is called Dear Albert, and it kicked off the festival last night at NYU's Skirball Center. And I mentioned this was a stage reading of Einstein's letters, not a full-fledged play. But Alan Alda, want to give us the context? What are these letters?
Well, these are letters between Einstein and the women, mostly the women in his life, the two wives he had, and assorted other women who he was either pursuing or had relationships with, plus his friends, plus in the midst of this chaotic life that he had, his effort to find a unified field theory in the universe. There's something interesting and almost poetic about that.
The juxtaposition of those two things. So here is a little audio from last night's performance. This is Cynthia Nixon reading as Dolly and Paul Rudd reading as Einstein. This starts with Rudd's letter to Dolly, and this clip is about 2 minutes.
Dear Dolly, in a row I had a good idea for investigating the way in which a body's relative motion with respect to the luminiferous ether affects the velocity of the propagation of light in transparent bodies. Take care of yourself. Don't work too hard. Accept my 1,000 warmest wishes and address me more nicely in your next letter. Your Albert.
My dear Johnny, because I like you so much and because you're so far away that I can't give you a little kiss, I'm writing this letter to ask if you like me as much as I do you. Answer me immediately. 1,000 kisses from your Dolly.
My dearest Dolly, I arrived in Sarnen the day before yesterday, met by Mama, Maya, and a carriage. At this point, I was smothered with kisses. Then we drove off, but after a while, Maya and I got off to walk. Maya took this opportunity to say that she had not dared mention anything about the Dolly affair and asked me to go easy on Mama. That is to say, to keep my big mouth shut. So, we arrive home, and I go into Mama's room, only the two of us. First, I must tell her about the exam, and then she asks me, quite innocently, "So what will become of your Dolly now?" "She'll be my wife," I said, just as innocently, prepared for the proper scene that immediately followed. Mama threw herself onto the bed, buried her head in the pillow, and wept like a child. After regaining her composure, she immediately shifted to a desperate attack. "You are ruining your future and destroying your opportunities. No decent family will have her. If she gets pregnant, you'll really be in a mess." With this last outburst, I finally lost my patience. I vehemently denied that we had been living in sin and scolded her roundly. "The people here and their way of life are hopelessly empty. Each meal lasts 1 hour or more. Oh, you can imagine what hell that is for me."
Letters to and from Albert Einstein, as read on stage at the World Science Festival. Here in the City Last Night by Paul Rudd as Einstein and Cynthia Nixon as Dolly. I guess, Alan Alda, that was not from the time of his life with the picture that we're all probably most familiar with, the old gray Einstein with the bags under his eyes.
No, in fact, that's how the piece begins, is trying to compare the pictures that we're familiar with the pictures of Einstein when he was young and was really a smoldering, he had a smoldering look in his eye. And when he denies to his mother that he's living in sin, it's an odd thing for him to deny, because that seems to be his fondest wish, is to live in sin with somebody special.
Albert Einstein, ladies' man. There's some beach reading in that. So, Brian, is that typical of super scientists? We think of them as so devoted to their work and their research above all else, these, you know, nerdy, geeky lab rats. But they also have lives and gossips like everybody else?
Oh, yeah, we're just a bunch of cads. That's all it is. No, I mean, it is a remarkable piece that Alan has put together, because, of course, Einstein is this mythic figure in the culture who had this mind that could basically reach out to the edge of reality. And to see him struggling with the ordinary reality that all of us do, relationships, trying to get his work done, trying to have a home life that is satisfying and meaningful, well, that's what we all struggle with. So it really brings the wonder of science down to earth in a very human way.
And when he writes about the luminiferous ether, I guess somebody finds that hot.
Well, they both found it hot. He with his first wife was also a physicist. And they got each other excited talking physics, which you probably have.
All the time. Yeah. Yeah. Luminiferous ether is the best pickup line you can imagine.
One more clip. This is about a minute of Albert exchanging letters with another woman played by actress Francesca Fardani.
Simplicity. He was always looking for simplicity. Nature was beautiful but complicated. What was underneath that tied it all together? There was something underneath. He knew that, even as a boy.
I was maybe 4 or 5. I was sick in bed, and my father came home with a little gift, something to amuse me while I lay there, waiting to get better. It was a compass, just a small compass, but I couldn't believe what I saw. No matter which way you turned it, the needle always pointed in the same direction. Some invisible force was controlling it. My hands started to shake, and a coldness came over me. Suddenly, I realized that there was something all around me, around all of us, controlling that needle. A force field. I never forgot that moment. Ever.
Something was under the surface that could explain everything. Simplicity.
And I guess that's where it ends. But simplicity. So Brian Greene, founder of the World Science Festival, is that surprising to you to hear someone close to Einstein say that simplicity is the underlying message to his work?
Oh, goodness gracious. No, that is the key to what Einstein was all about. It's the key to the work that we are pursuing today. The goal is to take this rich but messy world that we see around us that's filled with stars and galaxies and particles and molecules and reduce it all to perhaps one master equation that may be describing how everything behaves and where it all comes from. That is the goal of the unified field theory that Einstein searched for throughout the last 30 years of his life but didn't find. And it's the work that we physicists today have picked up and are trying to push it forward.
Brian Greene and Alan Alda here talking about the World Science Festival currently taking place in New York and now in its 7th year. And I mentioned that you were at the announcement of the Kavli Prize this morning, which is awarded by the Norwegian Academy of Science and Letters and consists of a cash award of $1 million in each field. Those fields are astrophysics, nanoscience, and neuroscience. Did you present the awards this morning? Can you talk about—
No, the awards were announced this morning.
Okay.
They'll be presented. I'll be in Oslo to help present them in September.
And people are saying these are the second most prestigious science awards in the world these days, to the Nobel. Any recipients that you announced today that you're familiar with or particularly excited about, Alan?
Well, we got to hear about their work from other scientists in their field this morning, and a couple of them, a couple of the winners, also said a few words. It was a surprisingly engaging morning because the work they do is so fundamental, so exciting. It's basic science. And it opens up – what's interesting about it to me is these three fields, nanoscience, astrophysics, and the brain, each throws light on the other. And they were chosen as the focus points by Fred Kavli. I don't think with a strategic goal in mind. I think just with the idea that these fascinated him and kind of represented where modern science would go. And yet what's happening is they're collaborating with one another, and they seem far, far afield from one another.
And when you say they're shedding light on each other, well, literally in the case of the Nanoscience Award, where I'm looking at the announcement and talking about the scientists, it says, with their respective work, they have challenged established beliefs about the resolution limits of optical imaging, showing that light can interact with nanostructures smaller than its wavelength.
Who knew?
That's going to get some young woman attracted to somebody if Feinstein is any representative.
Absolutely. And the other award that I'm more familiar with is the award in astrophysics, which was awarded to Alexei Starobinsky, Alan Guth, and Andre Linde, who came up with what's known as the inflationary theory of cosmology, also Paul Steinhardt and Andreas Albrecht as well. And this is our best understanding of why the universe started expanding in the first place. We all talk about the Big Bang. Many people don't know that the traditional Big Bang theory leaves out the bang. It doesn't tell us why things started to expand in the first place, and that's what these guys came up with in the inflationary theory. So a wonderful theory and a well-deserved award.
And I should say it might make some young woman or some young man hot because we don't know the gender either. I don't know the gender either of the winners or their sexual orientation. So this
very well said.
Inflation that you mentioned – the Astrophysics Prize, I wonder if you can do a one-minute explainer on this.
Yeah, sure.
They received the prize for, quote, pioneering the theory of cosmic inflation. Ben Bernanke not involved, right?
Exactly. Now, the idea here is that we're used to gravity being a force that does one and only one thing. It pulls things together. It's an attractive force. You drop your coffee cup, it falls to the Earth. The Earth pulls on the cup, they come together. Now, that doesn't sound like it could be the force that would drive an outward swelling of space. That needs to push the other direction. But it was realized that in Einstein's theory, these guys realized that in Einstein's theory, if you have an exotic source of gravity, not the Earth or the Sun or the Moon, but instead an energy field that fills space, it can give rise to repulsive gravity, gravity that would push outward. So the idea is, in the early moments of the universe, space was filled with this stuff, this outward pushing energy, and that's what gave the bang.
And with the $1 million prize, I can hear all of our listeners suddenly changing their majors. Alan, one other event that you're taking part in is announcing the winner in the What is Color Challenge.
Right. We'd still call it the Flame Challenge because that got some attention when we started it, asking scientists to write an explanation of what is a flame so 11-year-olds could understand it. And this year, the question that the 11-year-olds came up with around the world was, what is color? And what's wonderful about it is the 11-year-olds around the world are the judges of the scientists' explanations.
Ah.
And you should see the videotapes of these kids who take this so seriously. And they say things like, you know, that's a very good explanation, but it kind of misses in a couple of areas.
They say if 11-year-olds could vote, we'd be spending a lot more money on education and a lot less on war and Medicare. But they can vote in this.
And they love it. And this year, 26,000 kids have picked the winners from among hundreds of scientists. And we'll announce the winner on Sunday at the World Science Festival.
So for our listeners, here's a little bit from one of the finalist videos. This is physicist Diana Cowern describing the relationship. And again, this is what's going to make sense to an 11-year-old, the relationship between color and wavelength.
For example, red has a longer wavelength than green, which has a longer wavelength than blue. So, let's take a look at your wavelength. Well, it looks like you are all the colors of light, which means you're actually white light, which is just a combination of all the other colors of light.
So that's one. And here's a bit from another finalist video. This is Jessica Wilson using a slinky to demonstrate the idea of wavelength.
But if you consider this slinky as an example, and pretend that this slinky is actually a unit of light, that means the curls of the slinky are similar to its wavelength, right? Now, if that's the case, then this unit of light can have very small, very short wavelengths, or it can have very long wavelengths, or it could have a wavelength that's just kind of somewhere in the middle.
So there is a scientific assumption in that video, which is that in the era of Angry Birds, 11-year-olds still know what slinkies are.
Well, don't forget, it's a video, so they can see the slinky.
You can see it moving around.
Yeah.
Is it harder to explain something like color to an 11-year-old than to an adult? I mean, in a way, I feel like I finally got wavelength just now, and I'm way older than 11.
Yeah, well, I think explaining things to 11-year-olds can often be easier, especially if you're talking about esoteric ideas, because their minds are open to the most wild ideas. When you get older, you get set in your ways of thinking about things, and it can be harder to take on board some of the novel concepts that science comes to.
And that's one of the reasons I chose the age of 11. It actually came about historically because I was 11 when I asked a teacher, "What's a flame?" And I got a very unsatisfying answer. She said, "It's oxidation." And that was it. And too often when people are explaining something complex to adults, they figure they can cut short the simple explanation and get right to some basic terms that everybody's expected to know, like oxidation.
And too much science education is just memorization. Like all you would have been expected to do was go in at the end of the year and answer, is a flame A, oxidation, B, reduction, C, something else.
Right. Right. And there's no real understanding, no real contact with what the process itself is. No, by the way, no sense of discovery. If you are told to remember these facts and you don't get to discover them yourself, it's not as exciting.
Brian, the last time you were on the show was when you were launching World Science U, which also has this sort of educational component. Bunch of videos that explain important scientific concepts. Are you finding that it's mostly young people or college students or adults who are taking advantage?
It's actually quite a wide range. We've had, I don't know, about 130,000, 135,000 people have signed up to use the materials. And we've gotten emails from so many of them. And some of them are young kids who are using this material to supplement a high school course or a college course. And some are elderly folks who have lost contact with science and they're finding this as a way to get back into it. So there's a real powerful opportunity here to use the internet to teach science in particular in a way that I think will be far more effective than what we have traditionally done.
And I'd like to say something that Brian can't say himself. These are exquisitely produced and performed videos. It's not like any MOOC that you see on the internet where there's a teacher in the corner down at the bottom and the screen is filled with his or her slides. This is drama. It's just wonderful.
So before you go, and I will let you plug what's coming up at the World Science Festival that our listeners may want to go to in the coming days, but one of you wants to comment, I understand, on a recent AP poll on global warming. Which one of you is that?
Not me.
I thought it was you.
Uh-oh. All right. So maybe I got bad information here. But the poll says 78% of those surveyed said they thought the temperatures are rising, and 80% called it a serious problem in this nationwide AP poll. We'll put aside whether it's worth doing public opinion polling on a measurable question like are temperatures rising. But if 80% of Americans think it's a serious problem, where's the disconnect in terms of the policy response?
I don't know. I think there are two problems. One is education, information, communication. But the other thing is, how do you handle people whose livelihood depends on denying the facts? So that's a separate problem. No matter how well you communicate to them, they're going to still deny it. And I think one of the things to do is establish a familiarity with everybody so that everybody understands we're all in the same boat.
So before we wrap this up, I have to acknowledge that the jokes we were making about Einstein being a ladies' man has turned into a big conversation on our comments page. And a few people are flagging the Warren Zevon song Genius, which has a chorus about this very thing.
Albert Einstein was a ladies' man. Charlie Sheen, he was a genius.
Warren Zevon, obviously a student of history.
That's funny.
There you go. So what is coming up at the World Science Festival? Brian, this is going on until when, and what are some of the highlights yet to be?
Goes through Sunday, and today there are a couple of programs that are really exciting. Science and Story with E.L. Doctorow and Joyce Carol Oates, Steven Pinker, and other writers exploring how you can make science exciting to a literary public. This is at Cooper Union this later this afternoon. Also, a showing of Gravity on the Intrepid at the Space Shuttle Pavilion, where you watch Gravity with astronauts and really discuss what it's like to work in space with the folks who actually do it.
Is that, wow, that's exciting. Is that the same as the stargazing exhibit on the Intrepid tonight?
Stargazing will happen a little bit later, since you need to be darker for the stars. Yeah. So after the showing of Gravity, there will be stargazing on the Intrepid. Also on Saturday, stargazing at Brooklyn Bridge Park. Sunday, the Ultimate Science Street Fair in Washington Square Park. It's wall-to-wall science, which is a real exciting day for kids and families. So people just go to the website and see the full schedule there.
So this is a very exciting day. If people decide in the city to take advantage of Manhattan Henge, you know Manhattan Henge,
yes,
right? This is the day that the street grid lines up perfectly with the sunset.
Today is the day?
Today's the day
of
Manhattan Henge on the west side. And then you just walk right onto the Intrepid.
Wow.
And it's a day you'll remember for the rest of your life.
I agree with you. That is quite an experience.
Anything else, Alan, that you want to throw in that's coming up? Are you going to be on stage anywhere?
I'll be presenting the What is Color thing. We have scientists on stage doing wonderful interactive things with the audience, which, you know what's so interesting? When you do it so that an 11-year-old gets it, then I get it, and so does everybody else in the crowd. And so it's a wonderful thing to see it presented with accuracy, without dumbing it down, but in a way that communicates from the heart.
But you're coming tonight to my program on quantum mechanics.
I am. I can't wait to get the quantum mechanics. I'm just going to watch the quantum mechanics one. And tomorrow night, what's that?
Tomorrow night, we're doing on the Big Bang, the recent announcement inflationary theory. So that's Skirball tomorrow night, that program.
Brian Greene, Alan Alda, World Science Festival Week in New York City. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great fun. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the history of New York as the capital of capital. Stay tuned.